everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing off and running here on Tuesday, June 4th, 2024, in our 14th year with our radio program, 13 and a half full years. Coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on the campus of Bustos Media, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030. KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, also the place for all of our podcasts, our live line for our telephone interviews, and we'll be doing a couple of those today, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line up to Phoenix. Dave Wells, Dr. Dave Wells, Research Director of the nonprofit and nonpartisan think tank known as the Grand Canyon Institute, joins us. And Dr. Wells is going to clear up a question that a lot of people, a lot of taxpayers in Arizona have been asking: what in the world does the voucher, the school voucher program, what is it costing us? And Dr. Wells has come up with some hard numbers, and we're kind of getting the scoop on this. Dr. Wells, first of all, thank you for joining us.
Oh, glad to join you, Bill.
So I said we're kind of getting the scoop because this is kind of like hot off the press and really has not been released yet publicly, I believe. But I want to hear what your research is showing, Dave, about the vouchers.
Sure. So the vouchers became they had a universal voucher that this is the second year that it's been in place. And before that, there was a voucher program, but it was primarily used by kids with special needs. And when the Department of Education puts out numbers, they don't separate them. So I've been working on trying to separate them. Anyway, so the overall program in the current fiscal year, the current like school year, probably costs about $700 million. The part of it that's a universal voucher program costs about $385 million. That's the gross cost. And then some of the kids come from districts and charters, and some never attended school before. And this is the part that I calculated, is that the net cost of the universal vouchers is $335 million.
Wow.
This current year. And that's largely because almost all the kids in the universal voucher program never went to a district school or a charter school. They went straight. They may have already been in private school, and now they're getting paid for, or they're being homeschooled because they say we'll do some other reports. And one of the other things that we've also found is that a lot of the money is not being used to pay for private school tuition. It's being used for various kinds of either homeschooling or extracurricular activities. It's a $335 million cost to the budget.
So kind of break down those figures again for me, Dr. Dave Wells, from the districts and then from charters. Kind of explain that.
Sure. So we estimate, so they do put out where kids came from now this year, but they don't, and we use some historical data to try to estimate how many of those kids were in the pre-universal program. So we estimate of the universal program, about 9% of the kids came from districts. And in those cases, we have a state equalization process. So on average, and it depends on the district, but we find that the net cost per student of those kids is about $3,284. Some of the kids, about 7%, were in charter schools before they came into universal vouchers. And then those ones, the state actually saves a little bit of money because the formula for the voucher is 90% of what they would have gotten at a charter school. But they don't save very much money. So overall, they save about, the state saves about $3 million that way. But there's 84% of the kids who never attended districts or charters is what we estimate. And those cost the full average cost of a voucher, which for universals is about $7,136, and that costs $322 million. And so our net cost is $335. We've also looked at it by districts, and I've gone through that. The district which has had the most students that appears to be going in the universal vouchers is Scottsdale. And Scottsdale is notable because Scottsdale is a state that is a district that has no state funding because they're so wealthy.
What?
But now all of those kids are getting paid for by the state instead.
Oh, my goodness, Scottsdale. And then this this group, Save Our Schools, has pointed out that some of these items, they've been highlighting some of the items that parents have bought with taxpayer dollars through the Empowerment Scholarship Account Program. Golf clubs, to an espresso machine, to an inflatable bounce house. Come on.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, a significant amount of money has gone. We did request the data for all the students in private schools from last academic year, and I've requested the same data from the year before vouchers to see if I can make some comparisons. But yeah, I was actually astonished at how relatively small the total amount of money actually went to the private schools is. So a significant amount of it has gone to things like that. A lot of it also, I think, is sitting in the people's accounts. So basically the money gets transferred to parents. Then the parents' money. And if they don't spend it, they can roll it over. And eventually these can become essentially college savings accounts, which is one of the things that we'll be trying to monitor more carefully.
Sounds like free money, I tell you. So how does this play in? Now we've got a budget crunch here in the state. So give us the big picture. How does all this play into that?
Well, that's going to be a mess. I mean, I think there's a good chance we'll see action on the budget next week, because apparently a number of Republican lawmakers are about to go on vacation. So they only have the bare majority. So we may see votes next week. You know, the Republicans haven't been willing to negotiate about anything about the ESA program. So it's likely to, you know, be in the budget, whether there'll be any more accountability measures, because the fund, you know, besides funding all these things, the private schools themselves don't have to be certified in any way. So we'll have to see. But yeah, I think, you know, this is going to be one of the things that we'll see, you know, if it's something that's in the budget, which most likely is going to be because their Republicans are insisting that it stay as is, then it's going to come out of other programs. So there'll be cuts likely, you know, across the board in the budget. It's what I've been expecting. It's what was in the Hobbs memo a while ago. And so you're going to see a lot of little cuts. It might seem like a little bit, but the net effect is that you'll have, you know, probably transportation projects delayed. When you try to reach government officials, it's going to take longer. Lots of other, you know, things that are going to head up. And we're certainly not going to be addressing our teaching shortage that we're having in K-12 either.
Are other states doing this?
Well, yeah, it's actually been growing in other states. But a lot of national media has been focused a lot on Arizona, since Arizona was the first state to adopt it. And now we've completed, you know, 2 years of it. And then, you know, looking at the effects of it, there's been a lot of documentation that the ESA program overall tends to favor wealthy people. That's the Brookings Institute put out a report about that a few weeks ago. But there hasn't been a lot of work, because it's hard actually to try to pull out or estimate what portion of the folks are actually in the universal program. And that's where we've tried to center our things with it, because it's because the idea that you eliminate the entire ESA program is really not politically feasible. But the idea that eventually you might eliminate the universal part, that I think is something that could happen. And so we're trying to estimate what those actual costs are.
Great work, Dr. Dave Wells at the Grand Canyon Institute. And again, to summarize Dr. Wells's research, the estimated net cost of the universal vouchers in Arizona, about $337 million. Any final thoughts, Dave, before we let you go?
No, but we'll be releasing this report as soon as we're able to, so people can keep a lookout for it. But you got it first on your radio show.
Good.
And we'll hopefully be launching a budget challenge very soon, too, where it will be a public-facing thing that people can link to our website. They see some of the trade-offs that we're involved in with the budget as we approach what could be the budget week next week.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Dr. Wells. Thanks, Dave. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
All right, that'll wrap up segment one. Shelly Fishman is waiting in the wings. And Shelly's not waiting in the wings. He's seated across from me in the green thing, Zocalo Village Studio. And if he was to give me a thumb up or thumb down, his thumb would be all over the place. Been one of those days. Talk to Shell right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And I don't need to send Shelly an email. I can make eye contact and see him right across the desk and say, "Hey, Shelly, how are you?"
Well, today I'm confused.
Yeah, the market, this is kind of like a wandering... June is like off to a
funny. June weird. Is busting out all over.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It's.
We were up at one point today, 200 plus yep. points. Now we're back to neutral.
Right. Well, now we're up about 100. But the Nasdaq and the S&P 500 are in negative territory, but just barely. So the question is, in this directionless market, and why is the market directionless? It's directionless because the economic data is so confusing. You've got a reduction in GDP, a gross domestic product increase for the first quarter. We had this fantastic last quarter of the year last quarter. That was coming in at like 3.6% annualized. Well, you know, everybody knew that you couldn't do that anymore. I mean, that would take us back to the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
But so everybody said, well, maybe we get 2.5% for the first quarter of 2024. And instead, we got 1.3%. Now, it turns out there's a lot of garbage in those numbers because there's a lot of inventory shifts and some of the imports never made it into the numbers. So we really don't know how accurate those numbers really are. And from quarter to quarter, we'll see some rises and falls. But if you're an investor and you take a look at those kind of numbers, you also see the likelihood that consumer spending is still pretty strong. We're going to see the numbers on the labor market this Friday. And then the Fed meets next week. And so if you're an investor, you're kind of like, you know, I'm not sure I want to do a lot right now. I need to watch what's going to happen.
And you really shouldn't do much.
Well, you shouldn't anyway. Yeah, but when I say an investor, I mean an active investor.
Yeah.
You know, a big fund manager, kind of thing. And so what we had is we had a fairly significant overbought condition in the Dow. And we got that corrected last week somewhat. You know, we had just some ridiculously bad days in the Dow. And then on Friday, we had a ridiculously good day. So it can't, you know, make up its mind. If you're just an average investor like you and me or whatever, you know, you look at that and say, is it telling us something? Has anything fundamental changed? And the answer is no. Now, if we begin to see trends month after month, if we see, for instance, the labor market slowing down so that we begin to see unemployment numbers that start to climb back over 4% and stay that way, then, you know, that'll tell us something. But what this is telling the Fed right now is that there are early signs that the economy may be slowing down past what it looked like it was slowing down in the last quarter of last year, or even in January and February. And so I keep my fingers crossed and say, maybe, just maybe, the Fed will take this as a good enough excuse to say, we're going to lower interest rates for the next couple of meetings. Now, they've told us we can expect 2 interest rate reductions this year, but nobody that I know is forecasting that they do it as early as June.
So it could happen.
It could happen. If it happens,
well, the market
you will
go
see the
crazy.
Market go nuts.
Yeah.
But you will. What you will also see is some real good stimulus for housing and for large purchases like major appliances and automobiles. So if we begin to see movement in that direction, then this will be a tremendous year for the markets.
Well, the typical investor, not the ones doing the big funds, but like you and I, we're sort of on the sidelines watching all of this.
And which is where we should be.
That's where we should be.
Yeah. So when people say, you know, what's an investor to do? And I say, well,
throw up your hands.
You know, it depends. The answer that, you know, any wise advisor would give to a question like that is it depends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it depends on what your risk tolerance is. And, you know, if you've got a chunk of money that you consider gambling with, not investing, but gambling with. We know that, and gosh knows, in the past dozen years or so, you and I have talked about what it means to chase the curve. People who chase the curve always lose.
Isn't that called like market timing?
That's market timing, exactly. So if you start making decisions based upon what happens in any one month or any one quarter without any fundamental changes driving or appearing to drive those decisions, then you're always going to be behind the market. You're going to sell low and buy high, which, of course, is exactly what you shouldn't be doing. So when people ask me, what should I as an investor do? And I take a look at you and I say, well, you're about, you know, in your 60s, maybe retired already. The answer is, you know, chat with your advisor to see if there are little tweaks you want to give to your portfolio. But on balance, do nothing.
We rarely talk about the bond market.
I know.
Should we be
talking about it?
It's so boring.
No, I know. It's not. So the bond market in general was affected negatively by the reduction in interest rates. And the reason for that is if you invest in bonds and bonds just are reflecting lower interest postings on the bonds themselves. You know, short-term interest rates are down at, you know, something silly. But even medium and long-term bonds are less than they were, say, two years ago. So if you look at a medium-term bond and you see, well, you know, maybe I can get 5% out of it, or a long-term bond and maybe I can only get 4% or 5% out of it, then your propensity to buy that bond is much lower than it normally would be. So what's happened is that the bond market has been somewhat depressed, especially in the last 12 or 15 months. What we're seeing now, as people are anticipating that the Fed is going to begin to normalize rates, is people are thinking this might be a good time to buy bonds when they're low, because they will be driven up by rising interest rates. So that's why I say, you know, you work with your advisor and talk maybe about taking the so-called fixed income or the safer part of your portfolio and tweaking it a little bit, maybe extending the holdings out to longer term stuff, maybe taking a look at municipal bonds and maybe increasing the longer term durations of the funds that you have or the bonds that you're holding, just to take advantage of the fact that at some point the Fed has got to start lowering interest rates, and the bond market will pick up when that happens.
The Fed is watching the job numbers very carefully.
Oh, gosh, yes.
But the market hasn't, the labor market really hasn't cooled that much, has it?
No, it hasn't.
I mean, people are still working.
A couple of months ago, people were saying, well, if we get another month where the unemployment is creeping up, that'll indicate that, you know, all heck is going to break loose. Well, so we went from 3.6% unemployment all the way to 3.7%. And people said, oh, it's getting worse, and then to 3.8%. And so what we have now is a labor market that is essentially flat at a very, very good rate. And the reason for that is, you know, quite frankly, we have 9 million job openings right now, 5 million of which we can't fill. Because we don't have the skills here in this country to fill them, but another 4 million that people are negotiating for, and they're being filled at higher and higher salaries.
Yeah.
And so that's keeping people who might have been on the sidelines for a while, you know, who are looking and saying, well, you know, I'm 66, I'm 67, but I want to get back, I got to do something, and people are joining that labor force. And so what we're seeing would be an average good labor monthly rate of around 200,000 new jobs. That has been, on average, maybe 10%, 12%, 15% higher than that. And so that's a very, very aggressive labor market. And what we're seeing is, even though inflation isn't as low as we'd like to see it, that salaries have kept up and, in fact, run ahead of that inflation rate. And we're still not caught up to where we were 2 years ago. And we haven't had enough disinflation to allow people to think, phew, we're out of trouble. But if you take a look at what's happened in the past 24 months, we do have, again, new jobs outpacing job salaries, outpacing, especially at the lower end, outpacing inflation. And that's a good thing. The Fed looks at that with some alarm, thinking that it's inflationary. So, you know, a lot of stuff. That's why when you looked at me and were for thumbs up and thumbs down before, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's a crazy day and a crazy week. We'll see job numbers this Friday. We'll see. We saw manufacturing this morning. It was a little low. We'll see service revenues tomorrow. We'll get some idea of where this economy is going.
When you have unemployment under 4%, that's full. That's considered full employment.
Absolutely.
And it's been a long time since we had full employment.
It has been very long.
Yeah.
We haven't seen this many months in a row of full employment since the Eisenhower administration.
Wow. Wow.
This is very aggressive. Economists are beginning to figure out that the reason is because all of the economic or the econometric models that we used in the last half of the last century aren't working anymore because the world is so completely intertwined, and we have essentially open markets, even though there are tariffs. But we look offshore for so much of what we buy that the models just aren't working the way we're used to seeing them work.
We're
getting it figured out, but it's taking time.
All right, Shelley Fishman, have a great week. Thank you, Shelley.
You too.
All right. It is Buckmaster on the first Tuesday in June. Green Things is ready for the heat. My goodness, excessive heat. Warning 107, 108. After about 105, I can't tell really a big difference. Anyway, there are plants that can handle the heat, and they know which ones, and they will not only take you, they will then tell you all about the plants to put in your garden that will handle the heat over at Green Things. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, greenthingsaz.com, their sister business, zocalovillage.com. Green Things, 53 years approximately in business, and they are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. For those of you just joining us, and thing I like about the noon hour, it's drive time. People are in and out of their car, and people may not have heard our first segment because we broke some news here on the program. Dr. Dave Wells is research director at the Grand Canyon Institute, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank up in Phoenix, and he's been working, Dr. Wells, on these numbers for actually many weeks now, and he's come up with what exactly is the cost of the universal ESAs, that's the voucher program for fiscal year 24. And he says the numbers are from the second quarter report that they have put together and will be releasing to the public here within a couple of hours, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, but we got the scoop first. And the bottom line is the estimated net cost of universal vouchers in Arizona is about $337 million. Let's get reaction now to this story from our education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks, former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, associate professor emeritus and associate dean at the UA College of Education, and former Arizona Superintendent of the Year. Dr. Hendricks, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. I had about 15 minutes to catch my breath after listening to Dr. Wells' report, which is, it's a stunner. I don't know when this data is released, what kind of response we're going to get. I hope that it gets a lot of exposure and that people begin to think, what is really happening here? Because it sounds to me like the legislature, the Republican legislature, is basically going to let this coast on through without asking any more questions, without any further investigation as to, you know, what has happened here, which based on the Save Your Schools report, I mean, there's some real improprieties that questions need to be answered. And I'm not sure this legislature, in fact, I'm positive this legislature is not interested in hearing those answers.
Well, some of the lawmakers are insisting this is the way to go. Tom Horn, the superintendent of public instruction, saying these vouchers are not a threat to public schools. But regardless of whether the threat to a public school, it's how about being a threat to the taxpayers, Dr. Hendricks,
well,
the taxpayers of Arizona.
Yeah. And there were a couple points that he made that were new information to me. I'm pretty familiar with most of the data, and we've talked before about you know, what I would consider misuse of taxpayer money for extravagant kinds of purchases. And during the break, I was able to look up, you know, the Save the Schools report, which is very, very comprehensive. It talks about the non-school expenditures of the Amazon and the Apple, and without any zero transparency or reporting back to ADE, who ultimately gives this blank check to parents to use the money any way they want, you know, that's totally unvetted and no accountability. And that doesn't seem to be changing. And, you know, what's curious about that, and then I'll move on to my other points, is that this really has not had a lot of daylight, this information. You know, I've seen occasional reports. It's been, you know, sensationalized to a certain extent in different sort of expose kinds of things that, you know, they do on TV programs. But I've not seen a lot of in-print examination or analysis of what this money is being spent on. And I think people need to know, because as you say, it is taxpayer money. It's our money that's being spent. So that was one thing that kind of reminded me of that whole issue, but that whole issue of lack of accountability. But a couple things were kind of new to me that I had not heard the Scottsdale story. You know, the money that is allocated per pupil is based on a state formula. So, and the average amount is about $7,000. But if you're in Scottsdale, for example, where Scottsdale is one of the wealthiest districts in the state, and they don't take the same percentage of state aid. And since they don't take that same percentage, I suddenly realized, hey, they're going to get more than $7,000, you know, per pupil.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why Scottsdale is a popular mecca for the ESA, because there's more money to be had if you're enrolled in that school district because of the way the formula is calculated. The other thing that struck me, and I really need to look at this further, is that if I understood Dr. Wells correctly, if you don't use that total $7,000, you can roll over the balance and to the next year.
That's what he said.
Apparently, that money can be put into a college expense account, which is a type of ESA. But you basically can take that additional money and you can move it over, which is sort of a pay it forward to not only helping you with public school or school expenses at the secondary level, but also help you fund your child's college expenses as well. If that's correct, and I'm anxious to see the report, that's another revelation that I think has to be totally explored, because I don't think that was the intent.
No, no,
no. It was never the intent. And so these are amazing revelations, and I hope that the report is written in a way that lay people, the everyday people who are paying taxes, can read it and understand it, and understand that this is there's some equities here that just really need to be explored, and we just can't simply dismiss it as saying, well, it's a freedom of choice. I agree with the idea of freedom of choice. I agree with the idea that if parents want to send their children to private school, if they want to homeschool them, if they want to look at alternatives besides the public school system, that's fine. But there's a cost to that, and the cost has to be reasonable, has to be fair, has to be equitable. It can't be outside of what you would get in the public school system in terms of cost and value. Some of this money is being used irresponsibly, and somebody's got to call them on that. And I think from the first report that I read on this bill, which was over 9 months ago, I think very little has been done by ADE to respond to correcting these issues. Maybe I'm wrong, but from the responses I've seen from our state superintendent, he seems to think that this is perfectly okay, perfectly acceptable to use money any way that parents want to use it. And I strongly disagree.
Yeah, how could the intent of this be for rich kids in Scottsdale to be leading the way with the utilization of these vouchers? It just is unbelievable, Dr. Hendricks.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And again, that was a piece of information I had never even thought about, but I do know that there's a formula. And now there are very few districts that are in the situation Scottsdale is in. I mean, you can look at the districts that surround Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, neighboring school districts, Madison. They do fairly well, but they pretty much stay with the average formula. But Scottsdale is an anomaly, obviously it's popular there because people see if you go there, follow the money. You're going to get more money if you're in a district that gets less state funding. It doesn't need as much state funding.
Well, I wonder what the reaction will be from Mr. Horn, who is, by the way, out of the country. He is in Cuba. His wife is Cuban, and I spoke with Mr. Horn actually over the weekend. But we didn't get a chance. We didn't have these numbers at the time. He is going to be a guest. I think, let's see, 2 weeks from this Friday, he'll be our Friday Focus interview, but it will be interesting to see his reaction to this news. With that number is just a huge number, $337 million.
If this number is released in the next day or two, probably a good idea that he's out of the country.
Yeah,
but I know he'll be back.
Yeah, he will be back. I think he'll be back. Yeah. Actually,
and
soon.
I hope that he is the questions are posed to him where he does have to answer it. And I hope that I can participate in that conversation. I'll make sure that I'm available.
We'll look forward to your calling in for sure that Friday.
Sure.
to send Mr. Horn a question. Anyway, let's take a break right here. More with Dr. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education, reacting to the big story from the Grand Canyon Institute, shared first here with us on the Buckmaster Show. And the story is that the estimated net worth of the school voucher program in Arizona comes in at $337 million for fiscal year 24. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub. serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. Busy news day here on the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive, perfect time of year, up to 107 to 108, I don't know, close to 110. That sounds like a good time to get away to Silver City, where the temperature will be 10 degrees, maybe 15 degrees cooler because of the elevation. Only about a three-hour drive over to a, there it is, 87. Not bad at all. Still in the mid to upper 80s at midday in Silver City. Find out more about a great kind of getaway, vacation getaway, by visiting their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We're talking about the school voucher program and the news that broke here on our program via the Grand Canyon Institute sharing with us before they have shared with the public their report on the estimated cost of the ESA universal school vouchers, coming in at $337 million in Arizona for fiscal year 24. Had a listener, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Dr. Hendricks is on our live line presented by our friends over at Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. But Dr. Hendricks, a listener by the name of Michael, says, I assume he's a big supporter of school vouchers. He believes that it gives the parents the alternative to leave a public school where they feel, and he points out, to leave TUSD, where they would believe the parents that they can get a better education via the school vouchers by going to a private school. So your thoughts on that quickly.
Well, it's if he feels that way, I think there's legitimacy to his opportunity to make that choice. I have no argument with that. My concern is that the money be used equitably, and that that whatever money he might have used as a public school parent ought to be the same amount that he used in a private school, and that it be used the same way, and that if there's going to be some differentiation there, we ought to look at it and make sure that it's equitable and accountable. And in some cases, we know that it's not.
Did you want to touch on this other topic about teen and social media use, or do you want to stay?
I would.
Okay.
We don't have a lot of time, but I'd like to talk a little bit about
5 minutes,
some of the more recent studies that link social media with mental health, particularly among tweens and teenagers. It's a big issue, and I'm sure your listeners are well aware that there are certain media platforms that particularly teenagers use, and TikTok is the number one platform, and then we have YouTube, Instagram, and Snapshot. What we don't have in that list, which may surprise some listeners, is Facebook. May be an enterprise that adults still use, but teenagers, not so much.
Mm.
They're more interested in the visuals that come with TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and Snapshot. But in any case, the American Psychological Association has recently released a report that teenagers spend an average of 4.8 hours daily reading and responding to social media.
Oh, my goodness.
And to add to that, I'll give you another statistic. 59% of teens say they would really have a difficult time if they had to give up daily use. This is really, really important to their life, to their lifestyle. And TikTok is, as I indicated, is the predominant social platform, highest among black teenagers and teenage girls. That is, they are the predominant users. Boys, not so much. But we do know that social media does affect teens. Doesn't affect them all in the same way. And I'm not suggesting, nor does the study suggest, that it's all negative, that children who have a support system, who feel positive about themselves, can go about and use social media, and they're not as vulnerable as those who overall have difficulties with their mental health. And we know that 41% of those of the highest social media use is among children, teenagers who have mental health that's either poor or very poor. And strikingly and disturbingly, 10% of this group, Bill, express suicidal intent.
Oh, no.
Self-harm.
Oh.
So we've got a vulnerability here that I think needs to be really looked at. And I won't get into too much detail here, but I will suggest that parents need to monitor what their children are watching. And I realize that for teenagers, for a parent of a teenager, that's very, very difficult to do. But it's important that parents know what their children are looking at. There was one commentary that came from the Pew Institute of Research, a commentary from one teenager who said, "I began using social media in middle school. The promotion of unrealistic body standards made me question my self-esteem.
Ah.
I spent hours comparing myself to girls on these sites who presented themselves in a sexualized manner. It wasn't long before I was posing salacious content myself to be sexually desirable among my peers. Likes became addictive and validating. I covered them up, and because my posts I knew were inappropriate, I hid them from my parents by creating fake accounts or blocking their access. The result of this deceitful behavior was isolation and depression.
Wow.
We've got a huge problem here, Bill.
I know.
And something that maybe when we have a little more time, we can talk about some of the more detailed research. But all the research funnels towards parental support, positive relationships with teens. Teens who feel good about themselves typically do not fall down this black hole, which is created by individuals who are out there basically as predators.
Yeah.
Or influencers.
Let's certainly pick up on this, Dr. Robert Hendricks, but my takeaway, what I hear you saying, that 6 out of 10 of these teens are building their whole day around social media. Something bad.
Right. It's bad. They've created a fantasy life.
Yep.
Which helps them feel good, but it's not real.
Yep. All right.
And if that bubble bursts, then you have mental health breakdown.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Hendricks. Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.